Hey, somebody just actually commented on our, I put up a video ages ago for Euphoria, the saga, and then put AKA Heberecki or whatever.
Yeah.
And somebody just posted, thank you for telling me how to push down during jumping. Just got this on the Switch in the USA and the instructions are in Japanese. Oh, yeah, because you have to push down when you land on enemies in that game to, like, kill them.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I remember that being, like, a really weird mechanic.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot about
that. Yeah, like, little over-designed that way. Although, I guess the, you think of, like, the DuckTales pogo jump.
Yeah.
Didn't that kind of work the same way? Like, you kind of had to press down to, like, keep that going.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that.
I'm curious now, big time, on how they handle that in the new one.
If I remember, with that DuckTales remastered, I don't think you had to do that, if I remember.
Oh, I meant that new Euphoria.
Oh,
2
geez.
Or whatever. I gotta think they don't have that in there, but
yeah, you never know. Maybe they kept it faithful.
Too. Yeah. Yeah.
A 1989 game design decision or whenever that game came out. I think it was quite a bit later than that, but
yeah, but it was, I think it was early 90s though.
Yeah.
I don't think it was like tail end of the NES, because it doesn't seem like it's pushing anything too hard, but
right.
That doesn't necessarily mean anything, but everybody, welcome to Pursuing Pixels. My name is Kevin Portellian. I'm here tonight with Randall Nollery.
Hey, folks.
And it's just the two of us this week. It's been a little while since we've done a little duo action.
It has been.
But I feel like John's got just so much stuff going on. I honestly don't know how he keeps his life together between all like the bands he's in. He's like, oh, I worked on this Pico 8 game soundtrack. Oh, I'm, you know, it's tax season right now coming up. Like, he's got to be so swamped right now. So hopefully he's doing well and probably getting in some gaming too. He also somehow manages to play triple the amount of games that all of us.
I know.
Both of
well,
us
having
do
like
somehow
three side projects that he's involved in, and yeah,
it's insane. And doing this with us, like, it's insane. It's insane.
It is
how he manages it.
He's a machine.
Not to say that we all aren't busy, but man, I don't know how he does it. But
he's a machine.
Yeah. Nonetheless, I know we've both been kind of busy lately, but we've been chipping away playing some video games as always, and I know you've been kind of spending some time with a tried and true.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say classic, but kind of a new tried and true classic.
I think it's kind of a new classic. And if Diablo 3 is a classic, which I think it is.
Yeah. Diablo just in general is a classic in my mind. Yeah.
Then I think Diablo 4 will, granted, it's still very much a live game. I'm constantly
like early
downloading
access, essentially,
updates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's, you know, I'll often be the sicko that goes into my settings on my Xbox, and I go to my games list, and then I go down and I basically force the system to look for updates on any games that I have in my library.
Mm-hmm.
And then often enough, Diablo 4 is one of those games. I'm like, oh yeah, new update. And of course, it's probably just like very minor, like bug fix stuff. But, you know, it's just nice to know that they're still caring about it and, you know, updating it. And they're always doing like these seasonal stuff. A lot of that stuff, you know, Tina and I will play this game together. It's basically the only way I play Diablo 4 is with Tina. And speaking of being busy, like, that's it's just a game that meshes with our life to be like, hey, you know, we got like an hour of downtime after we put Fiona to bed, and you know, we're kind of a little bit tired, but not like really, really tired. Oh, let's, you know, play Diablo 4 for like an hour just to kind of, you know, decompress or whatever, right? It's one of those.
Yeah.
And yeah. I love it for that. And it's so nice on the Xbox. It just, and those quality of life updates and the little updates they do, like Tino's like, did they update this? It feels like it just kind of like runs a little bit better. It feels like it just looks a little bit more vibrant. So like, it just like,
yeah.
And I kind of feel that way sometimes too. So, you know, big ups to, I guess, Blizzard et al. For all the the stuff they're doing. But it's just, we're finally kind of, you know, moving on to the main campaign stuff. For a long time, it was a matter of, we were just kind of going in any direction that kind of felt like, oh, we haven't explored over here yet. Oh, there's this little side quest that took us off on this tangent. And then that had another side quest within that tangent. And hours go by and you haven't done any of the main quest stuff that gives you, you know, horses that you could ride on to get around the whole world better, which we still haven't unlocked that. It's part of like a main campaign thing, but I'm just such a sicko for the side quest stuff. I mean, similarly, I only just now, because I got this Ganondorf amiibo, bothered to put Tears of the Kingdom back in so that I could unlock the paraglider, whatever template from the Ganondorf amiibo model or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, in doing that, I was like, oh, yeah, there's plenty of this that I haven't done in general, too. So, like, just kind of how it goes. Like, I only just now unlocked the ability to have more weapon slots and armor slots along the way when I happened to do that with that Ganondorf amiibo. I was just back in the main town where I'm like, oh, that's why I was getting those Korok seeds, so I could unlock more of this stuff. Gone like 100 hours without doing that. That's just how my brain works. I don't care about the main thing I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
So all that to go back to Diablo, that we're finally now tracking the yellow things on the map, which are like the main campaign things, of which there's more than one, which is kind of cool, too, in different parts of the world. Like, there's like a main overall story in this big baddie, Lilith, who's like this super devil demon. But there's kind of, that kind of splinters off to different, like, sub-stories, but they're still part of the main campaign, I guess, separate from the side campaign stuff that you can also do, of which there is just tons of that. Any town you go to, there's probably like three different people with blue little exclamation points above their head. You go talk to them, ask them about their trouble. You take their trouble on, you go, you know, kill all the monsters that are killing their cows or whatever, and you come back and you get more gold and a couple of swords that are probably not good enough that you melt into materials that you can turn into stuff later. Rinse, yeah. Repeat. But yeah, it's just been fun to have that available. It's really stood the test of time since whenever Diablo 4 came out, that I'd say now more than ever, honestly, we're kind of still going back to that as our kind of, you know, mainstay gaming default together, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds like even at the end of the night, like you said, like after putting Fiona to bed, like instead of watching a TV show or something like that, it's like it almost, not that you can't get, like, I mean, you can get sucked into watching a bunch of episodes of a show. You can obviously get sucked into playing a bunch of hours of Diablo potentially. Oh, yeah. But it just seems like these days, I feel like it's very rare that I like get sucked into playing a game where it's like, oh, I'm up till 4 a.m. What was I doing? Yeah. You know, it's like I kind of just know my limits of like, OK, I play a game for an hour or two and I'm just kind of done after that.
You got to get up for work the next day or whatever. Yeah,
it's exactly.
It is what it is that way. And, you know, otherwise there's, for the show stuff, there's NBA highlights, of course, and there's Seinfeld reruns, you know, because you bought the whole set or whatever. So that stuff comes later. But Diablo, you gotta dedicate a good hour to that first. You gotta up your character. we only just now got to level 50, which, you know, basically they also pace it out where once your character gets to a certain leveling point, like in this case 50, it unlocks a whole another sub menu of you know, bonus abilities specific to your character and things like that. So like there's always things kind of happening on a meta level behind the scenes that's, you know, keeping your progress going, keeping it from ever seeming stale. You know, equipment you get that's better with certain abilities that maybe you don't have equipped or haven't put your points into, that you can respec those points into those other abilities. So there's plenty of ways where, you know, they're trying to keep the experience fresh over time.
Yeah.
It's fun. I like it a lot. It's really good. And the quality of life stuff, I've talked about it plenty already. In previous times I talked about Diablo 4. It's just so much better than even Diablo 3 was.
Yeah, I kind of forgot. Awesome. Like now that I'm remembering that all the times that you've talked about it recently was Diablo 4. But in my head, I was just thinking like every time we've talked about it was Diablo 3. But yeah, I kind of forgot that. Yeah, Diablo 4 has been out for quite some time now at this point, or at least, you know, the initial, you know, early access release or whatever you want to call it. But
yeah, which we grabbed it at that point, that early access. Yeah, it's been a while. I'm not even sure when it actually released here. It's been a minute.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys are still having fun with that one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll still be playing it for a good while longer. I've been getting a lot of good stuff out of that game.
Nice. Nice. So I guess a couple of things that that I've been playing before we kick it back to some of your resolution game that you've been digging into. I feel like that's just been the gift that keeps on giving between, John's been playing that one too, but some of the stuff that I've been playing lately, I scooped up a couple games on sale on Switch recently that I felt like were just kind of like a good pairing, both in like my mental headspace recently. And just like, I've felt like I've just been kind of jumping between these two, and I just picked them up a couple days ago. And I've had them both on my wish list for quite some time. The first game's called Railbound. And this is a game from the developer. And I guess I'll just mention the name of the other one too, since I'm just going to kind of pair them together, but I'll kind of talk about them separately. The other game is called Upoan, A Snake's Journey. I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation of that first word. from two development studios that I'm a big fan of. The first one, Railbound's from the team that made Golf Peaks and Invento that we've talked about on the podcast before. Invento is one that I actually scooped up recently as well. I haven't played much, but I saw that both of them were on sale for like $2. I think I picked up Railbound for about $2.50 or something like that. And it's normally like $12 or $13.
Ooh,
and
nice.
Just one that was just like, it's gone on sale for like $8 or $9 a few times, that I honestly would have been more than happy to pay that for it too. But like, this was finally the price. So I was just like, okay, like there's no reason to not buy this game for $2.50.
Invento's such a cute game too.
It is. The one thing I'll say, and same thing with Railbound, although I'll say Invento has, like, from the tiny bit I played of it, has like a little bit more like personality and charm in it. Although I shouldn't say that, because Railbound even has these great, like, you play as these, like, you don't really play as these characters, but you're on these, like, you're following the adventure of these like two dog characters that are like, you know, you're basically like laying the tracks of a train, you know, hence the name Railbound. And you're just trying to like get the cars of the train to line up with the main, you know, what's the front of the train called? The engine of the
engine.
Train.
Yep.
Just trying to get it. And like on the first stage, you know, there's just literally like train car number one, and you just have to line it up and just draw a straight line. And I was a little bit worried about how the console controls would feel. I saw like in all the trailers, like they're clearly showing like a mouse, like dragging and drawing the track. You know, it's a grid based game, but like you can clearly see, like if you click here and drag in this direction, it's going to like draw the track path in that direction.
Sure.
Like it just seemed a little more intuitive, but again, at like $2.50, I was like, even if the gamepad controls aren't great, I'm happy to give these guys $2.50. And even if I never play it and don't like how it, you know, the console port or whatever, but I'm happy to say that the console controls actually feel great. You know, there's a button for placing tracks, a button for removing individual like tiles of tracks, but then there's also like kind of like an undo button. So if you like do click and drag like a handful of tiles on one, you can undo those all at once.
Oh yeah, like the whole motion of that. Yeah, that's
exactly
nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you can just like rapid tap that as well to just like, you know, undo a bunch of previous moves. And then you can also just hit select or minus or whatever on the Switch, which is where I've been playing, to just completely reset the stage. And as things get, I just finished the second world, and it looks like there's like 12 worlds, each with like, you know, 10 to 15 stages or so.
Jeez.
And then some of those stages have like a second and third like twist variation, not necessarily of like the same exact stage, but like another stage like with a twist on the same like idea, you know, that you're solving from the last one. And it's all about, as you get further, like I don't think I've ever had more than three cars at a time, but you're just trying to get the cars to end up at the engine in the order, you know, 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
And make it there in time. And like on the second world, you know, they added the addition of like tunnels or caves, so like you can draw a track that goes up to one entrance of the cave, and they're kind of color coded, and then like, okay, now I'm gonna exit over here and then draw the path. And then you just you have a limited number of like train track tiles that you can use on any given stage. And it seems like on almost every stage, at least for me, I've had to use every tile. I think I might have had one or two where there was maybe, you know, an extra one left over.
Yeah.
But you know, you got to just kind of make sure, like, sometimes that second car is way closer to the engine, so you just have to kind of draw a path where it's going to kind of loop-de-loo around. Mm-hmm. But you have to make sure that, you know, the train cars don't crash into one another or don't, yeah, arrive in the opposite order or anything like that. And it starts getting really tricky again, even at the end of World 2, like, started playing some of those extra, like, you know, it'll be like, you know, stage 2-15, but then there'll be like a 2-15A and B, however they distinguish the kind of extra challenge levels. They just add like a letter to the number at the end. And like some of those get really, really tricky, even in this second world already. But
jeez,
it's just got like a really chill music aesthetic. And I know I've talked about, or aesthetic overall, but like the music's just this like low key, really, really great presentation. And then again, you're playing on as these like two dogs that are on this adventure. So every time you clear a world, you get like this little postcard, nice, kind of akin to how in Bento has these little cutscenes. And you actually, like, at first it shows like this giant cursor on the screen, and I'm like looking around, I was like, there's nothing you can click on. Like, and then when you hover over any one of the dogs, the cursor turns into like a little hand. And then you, if you press A, you like kind of pet them and they just kind of like grin and smile. I was like, that's just so, such a needless addition to this game, but it's just so cute.
Yeah. They know what they're doing with their games that way, don't they? They just have that kind of like cozy atmosphere that they're kind of creating there.
Yeah. And they're perfect for Switch too. Just like picking up. Although I will say for Inbento, that one seems like it would work a little bit better with mouse controls, because you're kind of like, just the way that you select things and then you have to pick right on the grid. I wasn't as happy with that console port. I'm not disappointed with it, especially not grabbing it for $2. But I would say that Railbound, I'm a little more happy with, like, being that I was especially going in a little bit reluctant, like, I don't know how this is going to work with the console controls. It's going to be a little tedious to lay all these tracks and whatever, but it feels really, really fluid, really intuitive. The stages are small enough to where you don't have to do like a million different things, but you do. It is one of those games where you really have to like stop and pause and look at it and think about it.
Oh, yeah.
And try a few different things, like a perfect, you know, it's a totally single player experience, but yet another one of those puzzle games that I feel like you can just play couch co-op with anyone who's nearby who can see the screen.
Oh yeah.
And just, you know, but again, also perfect for like handheld on Switch for playing, you know, through a handful of levels before bed, which is kind of how I've been doing it here. And then again, also playing this game Upoan, A Snake's Journey, and this is from the developer that made Undergrave, Raven's Hike, Red Ronin. I think I've talked about all those games. Nice. I know I've talked about Undergrave a number of times. One of my favorite like kind of strategy roguelikes in quite a while, and just kind of like arcade games in general. And another one I picked up on Switch for super cheap, but this is one, honestly, I picked it up for on sale for $2, and I should have picked it up before that, because it's only $3 normal price. Like, I don't know why I waited. Like, I just got to get that, like, you know, this is as cheap as it'll go on Switch at that $1.99. But and this is one I will say, if you watch like a trailer, especially the Switch trailer, it's a little cheesy. It's one of those ones with like live action, like there's like a stuffed animal snake and like a little kid playing on their Switch. And it's just like, okay, I don't know if this is like really selling me on needing to pick this up, but knowing that I'm a pretty big fan of the developer.
Right.
And this is like a top down, again, like grid based puzzle game. Railbound has more of like an isometric viewpoint, but it's still like that up, down, left, right, you know, grid based system, and same thing here. But this is more of like a, not turn based, but it's just, again, yeah, you're pressing up, down, left, right, and it's like Sokoban style, and also very similar to all of their other games, or a lot of their other games, where you're like kind of like when you press up, you're dashing all the way until, and you're playing as this snake all the way until you hit an obstacle. And then, you know, if you press left, you're going to move until you hit an obstacle. And there's basically four fruits on every stage that you have to collect. And each time you eat one of those fruits, also akin to like with the little influence of the game Snake, you know, like the old school retro arcade game.
Oh, yeah.
Snake grows a little bit.
Nokia after phone a certain legend. Number of moves. Snake. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly. Right. So, like, your snake grows a little bit after a certain number of moves after you eat any of the fruit. So you have to really kind of start planning out your moves. Like, even on the very first stage of this game, like, granted, once I saw what I was missing, I was like, oh my God, how did I miss that? But like, I seriously was stumped on the very first stage of this game. Then got going and there's like 100 stages. I'm about halfway through the second world. The second world kind of introduces a new mechanic where like there's these spikes where as soon as you travel over them, they're kind of triggered. And then after, so like once they're triggered, you can't go over that point again because the spikes are now sticking up. So, and it seems like they're just, each world is going to introduce like a new mechanic as you go along. Like in the trailer, they're showing like these blocks that you can push around. So like if you bump up against them from a distance, they'll stop you. But if you're already touching them, you can like nudge them another tile over.
Okay.
But all the puzzles are like pretty open-ended. Like none of them seem like, oh, you have to do it this way. Like it seems like every one I've been like almost solve it, and then I'll accidentally solve it a different way, and I'm like, okay, I didn't realize I could do it that. So it's not like a fully scripted, like there are definitely like, okay, you have to do this maneuver here at some point, but like they're definitely not done in a way where you have to definitely solve the puzzle this way.
I love that.
Which is really impressive, especially for how like, I would say the grid is like probably like at the most 8x8, maybe 10x10, but probably 8x8. And like
small play area.
Yeah, really small play area, especially as your snake starts to like grow. You know, I would say the snake itself takes up like about 7 or 8 tiles just to start. And then obviously you can't cross over and touch yourself. You can't touch any of these other obstacles. But just something about, again, this one's probably a little bit less fitting for like somebody sitting couch co-op and like kind of playing alongside you, even though I still think you easily could. But it is more like you could just make like quick, fast decisions. Oh, that's not going to work. Let me restart. Oh, that's not going to work. Let me restart. Like it's right. It's one of those kind of games more so than somebody. Like I do sit there and think about some of the moves for a while. But once you make one move, a lot of times it's like, OK, now I'm in this path that like I have to go, you know, weave in a certain way because I either have already triggered those spikes or whatever it might be. There's like once you make one move, there's not a ton of decisions you can make until you get to another kind of crossroads in the path. But I've just been really impressed. I think this was one of the developers' earlier games, so I also was kind of like a little bit reluctant to pick it up just because like, oh, I don't know. You know, it's got a lot of their games have these similar mechanics where you like, yeah, press up, down, left, or right and just kind of move until you hit an obstacle. So I was like, oh, is it just more of the same? And it is, but for some reason, it's just like the perfect little game on Switch that, like I said, it's been perfect. Like I just picked it up yesterday, actually, and it was like, I kind of got really sucked into it after I got stumped on that first stage. Just something about that made me think like, man, so what, like I got to solve this game a little bit. Not that I'm like a genius at it or anything yet, but I did feel like it was starting to click about halfway through that second world where I'm like, I'm starting to see the paths before trying it like 5 times and then going, oh, that's what I have to do. But it's just really great pick up and play. I'm a really big fan of this developer. Wired Dream Studios is what they are. And they just released a game on Steam called Frogue, which I've talked about on the podcast in the past as well. I kind of forgot that that came out, actually, because I haven't scooped that up just yet. But played the demo for that one. But just a really great developer all around. And yeah, I've been just a big fan of this one and glad to see that their games have seemingly been coming to Switch pretty regularly. So fingers crossed on Frogue, because it seems like they're all, I think every game other than Raven's Hike, and I could, maybe that one's out on there too, but I'm pretty sure every game other than that is on there, if not that one as well. So
their games just sound like a really good just match for the platform, just that portable pick up and play. I just want to look at this puzzle for a hot minute. I don't need something super actiony necessarily in this moment. You know, it's just really nice to have those options available on a platform like Switch.
Agreed. And it's actually worth mentioning, since you mentioned that, it's worth mentioning that I think just about all of their games are available on like iOS and Google Play, like on mobile as well. Now, I don't think every single one of their games, but being the way like most of these games play, like I could easily see the gameplay working great. Just swipe up, down, left, right, or if, even like some of these aren't very actiony.
Right.
So you could easily just have buttons right on the screen.
Virtual
below
D-pad.
Right below the, you know, gameplay screen, since it's just kind of like a square, you know, kind of gameplay field. So, yeah, definitely just a huge fan of both of these games. Like I would say I'm for whatever reason, I'm kind of digging Upon a little bit more than Railbound. But I think Railbound is just like I don't get as much momentum going with that game because you really do have to like stop and think and like, okay, this puzzle's stumping me. I finally beat it up. Now I'm stumped again. So it's like a little less, I almost like wish I had a couch co-op pal to help me beat some of these stages. But nonetheless, I can easily recommend both these games at full price, but I'm happy I scooped them up on the cheap on Switch and added them to the collection.
Nice. Yeah. My frame of reference when you're talking about the train game was my daughter watches Curious George, and there's definitely an episode of Curious George where George ends up having to take over for the person that's, you know, putting the cars in the proper order, the train cars, and got it all out of order. And there's not literally numbers on each one of the cars. And, oh, this one has to go through this loop, like you're saying a couple of times, because it's, you know, it's way out of order. Why is that last car up near the front? And like, oh, my God, George, what are you doing? So I was like, oh, yeah, that's where my head went. I'm like, yeah, that's my frame of reference for how train cars work.
Hey, so, it's not far off, even in like the like adorableness of like the dogs. It's got a little bit of that like kind of Curious George. Like the gameplay itself is almost like this like 3D like cell shaded kind of style, which is really cool. But then otherwise, it's like kind of this like kind of just more like comic book, you know, hand drawn kind of panels for cutscenes and stuff. But two really cool puzzlers. Definitely recommend both games and both developers.
Nice. Nice, nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, why don't I kick it over to you to that resolution game?
Yeah. East Book 1 and 2. So I'm like, I knew when I picked this, I'm like, I need to make myself play this more RPG-based, TurboGrafx, Turbo CD game. I talked about it before. The one other time I talked about it, I was pretty up on it. I was like, oh, I'm just having a great time. It's just like exactly what I'm looking for. Just turn my brain off, run into enemies until they die. there's even some like cryptic sort of things, but it wasn't that big of a deal. You kind of just, that's a conceit, you know, going in that this, you know, basically was developed during the late 80s and then released, you know, very, very early 90s, East Book 1 and 2. And subsequently, you know, like I said, been released on everything at this point, yeah. Seemingly.
Yeah.
But so after that session, when I was gushing about the game and having a great time, I had some good momentum, played through most of the other kind of like sub level dungeons that are around this world map, got all of the weapons so I could fill out my grid for all the weapons and armor, even though I wasn't going to use most of those. You had to fill it out. It's fine.
Yeah.
You basically get unlimited money by grinding anyway. Way more money than you'd ever need. A lot of that is very early game, like not necessarily, balanced, I guess you'd say.
Okay. You know,
kind of in certain ways, you're like, oh, yes, I could see how this was like kind of an earlier PC release. You know, it wasn't made as like this big mainstream, you know, success. This was like a game for Japanese PCs that just happened to come out on the, you know, PC Engine CD and then Turbo CD.
Right.
Yeah, having a great time until I reached the tower, which is kind of like the last area of East 1. And
oh,
you know, I guess slight spoiler warnings if you haven't played East Book 1 and 2, although I don't know how much there is to spoil. But
yeah,
this last tower area is like 22 floors, and all the floors kind of look the same. And okay. I don't have very good navigational mapping capabilities in the first place.
Yeah.
And there is no sub map or anything else to, like, you can tell what floor you're on by, like, when you save, it'll say, you know, floor whatever of the tower. Like,
okay.
That's often how I would, like, figure out my bearings of, like, where the hell am I in this overall scheme and, like, there's, to get out of the tower, if I wanted to go back to town to, like, get another healing item because you can only carry one. There's an item slot for one. You can't stack them. There's one healing item. You get one healing item. Same with, like, you get one item that is, like, this wing ability that will let you leave a level or a dungeon. But I'd already used that, and I didn't buy another one. So I was stuck in the middle of this tower, and I was going to have to either see it through or quit this game because I was listening to the same less than 2 minute track.
Oh no.
And it's on CD and like the duo is playing this and you can even hear like the duo like find the laser point on the disc to like play the track again.
To loop it.
And again and again and again and again and again and again and again. And they're like, I don't want to mute this, but I think I'm going to have to like or like try to listen to something else while I'm playing this. But then every so often there'll be like a real like character to interact with. And because it's an early CD game, there'll be like voice acting in on some of these characters. And I don't want to necessarily miss that, even though a lot of it is very like corny, but like in a fun way. Right.
You know, that like, that real like jilted kind of like,
you have to help us, Adol. Like, it's like very, you know,
yeah, like no cadence whatsoever.
Yeah. You must find the sword in order to beat, you know, whatever the name of the boss was. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Like almost like a, definitely a step above like Philip CDI type voice acting,
barely.
But I feel like, you know, yeah, not much.
Barely. Barely. So I still like as much as I could, I just tried to like, nope, this is the game experience. You just need to like push through this. You need to learn the levels so you don't get lost again on these levels, because on some of them it's like to go up the tower you kind of had to like go down and find this other exit, because there's
it's not super linear. It almost reminds me a little bit of the like Pokemon like Ghost Tower, mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. that was called, where you had to kind of like go up and like I just remember like having to do a little bit, like you had to find like the kind of secret staircase, mm-hmm. and like, oh, here's how you get up two floors at a time or something, yes. like that. Yeah.
Yep, there's a lot of that. There's, you know, and then there's still weapons and armor that you need to have to beat the game that are kind of spread out throughout these different floors, which are individual levels. But like I said, all the palette is like the same across the board. Like, not 100%. There's some cool areas where there's like, you know, some kind of like dragon faces on some of the pillars on a certain floor, or, you know, one floor kind of looks like almost like Splatterhouse type of like okay. gross out vibes. And that's cool. But most of it looks exactly the same and sounds yeah. certainly exactly the same. And, mm-hmm. You know, then I thought I had everything. I'm like, okay, I'm going to. The last few sessions I had with this game was just like, no, I have to see this through. I can't quit this. And I'm like, I might quit this. And then like I work my way up to what I think is the top of the tower. I didn't even get into some of these levels where it's like on ice. And then there's these mirrors that teleport you around. But then some of the mirrors teleport you to the beginning. And then you have to try again. And then you think you didn't do this mirror, but you certainly did. And you're back at the beginning. It just... Oh, it's brutal. Brutal.
Some of those ice sliding puzzles and those top-down games can be brutal.
Ugh. But this is my resolution game. I'm not going to quit it unless it's just like, I can't do this anymore. So I did the other thing that I often refuse to do, which is to look at game FAQs for a walkthrough. Okay. Because I got to a point where... I went all the way to the top of the tower. I thought, like, okay, I finally made it. I figured out a way to get to the top of this stupid damn tower. And then the door doesn't open. And
oh, my God.
Why doesn't this boss door open? I had already beaten this other sub-boss, which the sub-boss kind of only had this, like, DVD screensaver sort of pattern in the first place. It's just kind of bouncing around, you know, and like it. That may be an old reference for some of the listeners. Yeah. I don't know if they know what that means. I think there's like an Office joke about that from that show, yep, too.
Waiting for it to hit the corner. Yeah. I remember that in school. We'd always be like, just like, oh, is it going to hit right in that perfect corner?
It is that, though. That's what a couple of these bosses at the end were, which is, you know, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
Not very in-depth, but that's fine. So I'm like, God damn, I went all the way to the top of this. I don't have the ability to just teleport out of this whole dungeon. Am I going to have to backtrack through this whole dungeon, this whole stupid dungeon, and like try to even figure out how to backtrack? Because I was getting lost getting up in the first place.
Yeah, it's not like you know your way around.
No. Right? No, and like I said, I'm terrible at this sort of thing. It's one of my worst skills, just navigation. I'm going to go on game FAQs. What am I missing? Like, oh, yeah, there's this person you're supposed to talk to back on floor 11. I'm on floor 25. Floor 11 that, like, gives you this MacGuffin that you needed to open the door up at the thing. I'm like, okay, fine. So I just did it in chunks. I'm like, okay, let me go as far as I can stand it, you know, and then, you know, maybe I'm too tired to do any more of this, but at least I'm kind of tracking back down. Finally find this person. I got the MacGuffin. All right, let me come back another day. Start going back up the tower. Oh God, it's one of those stupid mirror levels. Let me figure out, try to memorize this in the moment of which ones I've tried to get through this and navigate this appropriately. And I did finally got all the way to the back of the top, and, you know, it only took me like two or three tries to beat this final boss, which was just another DVD screensaver. But you couldn't use certain armors or weapons, which is another thing that you wouldn't necessarily know unless you had talked to one specific character and remembered that from earlier on. But a lot of like early PC games could have some of this kind of, especially RPGs could have some of this kind of cryptic nature to them. Right.
Right.
Certainly anybody that's played any of of the like, oh God, like the Sam and Max or any of those sort of like more story based PC games of like the 90s and 80s. If you played any of those sort of point and click or any of those sort of games, you get into some of this kind of cryptic stuff too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very, very arbitrary, particular game design that comes into play sometimes. And this isn't as bad as some of those examples still, but it just in the moment, I was just like, life's too busy. My patience is thin here. Come on now. I just want to get through this thing.
Yeah.
I can feel like I'm at the end of this, and I better be at the end of this because the tower was not very well paced. I don't know how, like, the whole world was so fun. Like, I was having such a good time until I got to this, like, last section of the game,
like,
basically.
Yeah, it just sounds like a gauntlet, but mm-hmm. like not a fun gauntlet, because sometimes that can be a fun challenge at the end of a game, like, okay, I gotta just, like, you know, just power through this one last wave of challenges or whatever. But yeah, this sounds like the opposite of that.
It was a slog. It was a total slog at the end.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I beat the final boss. Like I said, only took 2 or 3 tries. Once I figured out, especially, you can only use these weapons. You can't beat him with your best weapons. Those don't hurt him. Yeah. And he even says, like, aha, you cannot defeat me with these. Like, you must use your silver armor and whatever. All right, fine.
Okay.
At least I have all that stuff. I was completionist enough that I had all that stuff anyway on hand.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of
equipment. Well, God, at least with some retro games, I'm, like, picturing at least you didn't have to, like, go back to, like, an equipment locker in, like, your house and change, you know, like, something like that.
Oh, then brutal.
At least you can just go into your inventory, yeah.
I probably would have done it, but I would have considered quitting again if that were the case. Yeah. But I did it. I completed it. It immediately then moved on because this disc is both the first and second games are on the same disc.
Yeah.
So then it just immediately went into a cutscene. All the cutscenes in this game are pretty impressive. Most of them are kind of like still shot, like sprite art, but it's so well done. The animations are simple, but it looks really nice. So
it's got a real clean look. Yeah.
Yeah. Really clean. Really nice sprite art. And, you know, like we said a million times, the TurboGrafx/PC Engine is such vibrant colors and it just looks so nice, right? So it's just showing that stuff off. So got to bask in the glow of finally being done with it, and it immediately kind of carried over. Didn't even ask, do you want to start East Book 2? It just kind of immediately like flowed from the end of it into the start of the next, which was cool. And I was like, oh, I guess when I save this, is like all the other saves now just say like East save one, East one save, East one save, like, oh, okay. Before they gave more context, but now I can tell I'm in like the new game, and, you know, let's overwrite these. And I was able to carry over my experience and my life bar, which is nice. I'm like, okay, ooh. So at least the grinding I did then, you know, kind of meant something too.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of the weapons or armor did, but that's okay. It's a, you know, start of a new adventure, you know.
If that's he interesting. Didn't
have
I wonder
amnesia, but you know, he might as well have had, right? It's every game from that era, so
yeah, that's sweet. I was about to say, I wonder if the original version had that, but I forgot you're playing the original version. I keep thinking about John talking about it because I was just editing, I think it was in a saver for the cast that I was editing recently, but I had some of that talk about John, and he was talking about the cutscenes and a few other things about that game, but yeah, I was thinking about the newer version, but that's awesome. That's it, that is pretty cool. I feel like that's a pretty early game to have a feature like that in it.
Yeah. Technically these are enhanced remakes of games that came out on a Japanese computer first, the PC 8801, you know, a couple years before that. But still very close to when those came out, ultimately, you know, very early and considered kind of the early, you know, definitive versions of how you would play these games, I guess. Obviously, subsequently it's come out on PSP and everything else under the sun, Steam included. But yeah, now I've started playing East 2. I can already feel, you know, there's new music soundtrack. Thank God. I can listen to new tracks. I can tell, like, kind of looks like there's just a little bit more graphical detail and a little bit more involved level design stuff happening already. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Nice.
I'm really excited now to have experienced the quote unquote worse version. Right. And then be able to carry that over into this new one. And I will say, too, one other shout out is I love these East games. It's so impressive that you can literally save anywhere. Like, I save. Yeah. My character is right there, like, on the grid, like, where I left my character.
Oh,
like,
that's awesome.
Really impressive. Like, I just, like, can't get over how easy that is. Yeah, for that era, yeah. Yeah. And there's, like, 5 save slots. Granted, like, it'll ask you to load a save. And at a glance, like, you can't tell which save is your most recent save. It's just, like, the name of the area you're in.
Like, okay, yeah.
Even in the tower, it would just be 5 saves of different levels of the tower, or sometimes the same level, but it didn't necessarily tell me which one was like the furthest along that I was based on my experience level or whatever. I'd have to load one, and they're like, "Oh no, that's not it. Let me go. Okay, load this one. Oh yeah, there I am. That's where I actually was."
Yeah.
But yeah, it's we got through the pain, and we're trucking along with a resolution game.
Are you going right into 2, or like are you planning on continuing right away, or are you planning on, okay, let me take a little break before I, you know, get back into the East action?
No, I think I'm going to continue on. The nice. Only quote unquote downside is we're going to have, you know, people visiting pretty soon, and like the main TV that it's hooked up to is also the main TV. So, you know, maybe I won't be playing for a couple of weeks, but no, I kind of feel rejuvenated.
That's to awesome.
Have completed it and to be on a new experience now with a whole new area, right?
Yeah, I was going to say the fact that that tower didn't kind of sour you from being like, not necessarily just like giving up fully, but being like, okay, I need a break from this before I dive into a fresh adventure, you know, of the same, you know, vein or whatever.
Yeah. I think it helped that I had such good connotations and vibes up until the tower kind of helped propel me that way too. You know, if it was a slog the whole way through, maybe that would have been a different story, but it wasn't.
Yeah, so. And just embracing a little bit of that, like, hey, it is a retro game.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah. You have to embrace the jank. There's certainly plenty of jank, and it's just a matter of they didn't know when they were making a game in the 80s, you know, what's a quality of life experience in this way or that. They did the best they could, right?
Right, right.
So I'm into it. Yeah. I'm happy to play too, and I'm excited where it's going to take me. I got a whole new menu. I got my beginner sword and beginner armor and beginner shield, and I'm grinding on low-level enemies and picking up MacGuffins again. So here we go.
Nice. Back at it. Back in the saddle. Heck yeah.
Yes.
Heck yeah. Well, man, we're already a quarter of the way through the year here, so I got to get on my resolution game here pretty soon, too, because I think John, did he play his already, too? I can't remember now. I don't even remember what his is off the top of my head, so I don't have to look that up. For a second, I was like, I don't know if I remember what mine is, but Return of the Oberdin, I'll get on that one of these days.
Oh, man, you
soon.
Have to tell me when you start playing. Okay. I remember John's was like that, too. I'm like, oh, you got to, like,
yeah.
Both of y'all, both had games that were very much on my radar that I want to play, and I own Return of the Oberdin as well, so
yeah,
when that happens,
I will definitely let you know, because I almost need that extra nudge of, like, I almost need to like tell you that I'm going to start playing it so that I then, okay, I'm on the hook now.
Stick
Randall.
With it.
I told Randall, like, now we both got to play it. And
yep.
Yeah. But
I'm prepared. Yeah. I'll open up the Switch cartridge slot because that's how I have it.
Oh, so. You got a physical copy? I remember you saying that. Gosh, dang it, man. I missed out on that one. But nonetheless, I'm happy to own that on Switch, and yeah, happy to have these 2 puzzle games on Switch. I've been picking up a bunch of random sale games on Switch recently, so
that's a great
platform. I'll talk about some more of those. Yeah. We were talking about before, I'm always like a little bit nervous, like how long is this thing going to last? But at this point, I have like hundreds of games on here. I'm gonna keep this thing running and make sure my Switch is in good working order, you know, or if I have to get a new one and, you know, whatever I need to do, because I just have too many games on it at this point. I'm not going to be rebuying these on a different platform.
No, so. At this point, it's its own classic Nintendo platform already.
Yeah.
I think it's already a legend that way. I think we're going to be sticking with this platform in one fashion or another for a while here.
Especially because, like, especially as they put out, like, Thousand Year Door remakes. And, like, some of these where I'm like, I have, like, kind of the new definitive version of this game. Like, you know. So, I think that the way you put it is perfect. It's almost like its own new retro classic.
It is.
Retro is not the right word, but yeah, a classic kinda, Nintendo console.
But then there's all the retro revivals and remakes, too. Like, it, you know, it kind of is. Like, there's a through line there.
You're kind of getting the best of the both worlds. Yes. Apart from, obviously, it's like the least powerful of all the modern consoles. Right. So like you're having to eat some of that stuff for whether the Nintendo releases or some of the games that are on, you know, cross platform. But other than that, yeah, it is just like I've got too many great games on here that I just need to have one functioning and hooked up to a, you know, my most active TV in the house.
You just need a dock hooked up, and then otherwise you can just play it portably too, which is like that's the conceit you take for it being less powerful, besides it being Nintendo, and obviously since GameCube they haven't cared too much about it being the most powerful anyway, but
yeah, you know. And for that matter, I don't really care about it all that much either, other than there are times where I'm just like, it is a little bit of a bummer because it's such a different, now, you know, there's a pretty drastic difference between Xbox Series X or PS5 and Switch, but nonetheless, it's like, in most cases, once I'm playing the game and having fun, I'm really not thinking about it that much.
Totally agreed, and for any indie thing, it's not going to make hardly much of a difference, more than likely, anyway.
Exactly.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think we could probably wrap things up there for this week, unless you got anything more to add on any of that stuff. But
no, not for now. There'll be more DVD screensavers later.
Nice, nice. Well, yeah, I'm wishing you luck on the book number two here.
Yes.
And yeah, as always, you can find us on the internet at pursuingpixels.com. We're pretty much everywhere on the internet. I've been a little more active lately posting on social media again. Not a ton, but I've just been like, before work, I'll throw up a post about a cool game. So I've been trying to just be a little less like negligent to everything else online.
Life is busy.
Exactly. And it's just draining to get on those sites sometimes. But I still want to just like, I want to spread the word about some cool games too. So, but yeah, nonetheless, we're on the internet pursuing pixels. And otherwise, we'll catch you next week and take care.
Bye bye.
It's like, it's almost like this is overselling it a little, but it's almost like Morph Cat level of like wizardry.
I would agree.
On the NES.
Yes.
It's
just no, like, I would totally agree.
How is this possible?
Mm-hmm. They understood that machine innately to create something. Both the soundtrack and the gameplay physics, it just it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. They just absolutely like lit the NES on fire with like just maximizing that thing's power.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nuts. Yeah. I got to play a little more of that game, get a little deeper. Yeah.
Good luck with that.
I know. I can't even beat the first boss, man. That one that starts just like chucking shit at you. It's just like, there's nowhere to stand.
I had no shame
without getting hit.
No shame with the rewind. Like you said, the rewind is not perfect, but I had no shame to use that over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. There's just no way otherwise.
Yeah.
There's no way.